Welcome in to episode number 109 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Last time we talked to you, the Colorado Rockies were at 47 wins. And this week, as we talk to you, the Colorado Rockies are at 47 wins. And at least you get to hear the people mowing the lawn in the background of this episode, which will be good.
First, it was Mike Farron last week.
Yeah.
Having making a lot of friends with people outside doing their work in the morning. And now it's you. So
yeah,
congratulations.
Now it's me. The guy mowing the backyard in my place looks like Richard Petty. He's got like the weird straw cowboy hat and sunglasses on. Like he looks like an 80s NASCAR driver.
What if it was Tom Petty?
And the Heartbreakers or just Tom Petty?
What if it was Tom Petty's brother, Manny Petty?
Manny Petty? Hope he has good hands and feet. Hey, welcome into the show. This week, we were brought into episode number 100 and Vinny Castilla by Modern Suspects, a Colorado Springs-based alt-pop band. Their stuff is terrific. That was the song Terrified. You can find them at soundcloud.com/modern-suspects or at facebook.com/modern-suspects. Really good stuff, and a big thanks to a fantastically named gentleman, Tyler Freeze, for sending that in to the show today. And again, if you are in a band or know a band or have a band or whatever type of band connections you may have, get in touch, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com, and let us know what songs you would like to lead into and out of the old PDP. We did this in season one, and I want to get back on it for season four because we actually have like a bunch of listeners now, so that's cool.
And it's been fun.
What has not been fun... the last 10 days or so of Colorado Rockies baseball, your Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, they're not mine. They're your Colorado Rockies.
Since Nolan Arenado's walk-off to complete the cycle back all the way 17 years ago on Sunday, June 18th. They've gotten 1-8, including an 8-game losing streak that was culminated last night, yesterday afternoon, a sweep at the hands of the terrible San Francisco Giants, who started the season 1-10 against the Rockies and are now 4-10 against the Rockies. The Rockies have dropped back to 5.5 back of the division leading Los Angeles Dodgers, 4 games back of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Still 6.5 games up on a playoff spot. The Chicago Cubs at 39-39. Are currently the first out, if you will, in the National League playoff picture. But not a fun 10 days. Not fun. Not great, Bob.
I honestly almost thought about boycotting this episode because of all the petulant children screaming on Twitter right now about the Rockies.
The core is held strong.
We have not handled this well at all.
No.
No. Like, it's the first losing streak of the season. They had been the best they'd ever been up to this point. We go on an 8-game losing streak. And every single person on Rocky's Twitter, I would say, besides, like, maybe, like, 10% have already freaked the hell out.
Yeah.
You all need to calm your shit.
Yeah.
That is all I have to say.
I mean, I'll say this for the people freaking out. Yesterday, recording the Minor League Baseball podcast, my co-host there, Sam Dykstra. If you want to hear a podcast where I like have to pretend to be mature and professional, that's the one that I do it on. Sam follows us, and Sam goes, it's been kind of funny to watch you guys and the people that you retweet and stuff, just like everybody run around like their hair is on fire. Sam grew up in Massachusetts. He's gotten to watch 45 major sports titles in his lifetime. And I told him, you don't know what it's like, man. You don't know what it's like to have watched a team be a dog's breakfast for 22 years, with the exception of 3 playoff bursts, 1 trip to the World Series where they got their dicks kicked in. You don't know what that's like. because when things start going well, the only thing you can think of is how is this going to end up hurting? And right. and he laughed and said, no, I mean, that's probably true. And I had to suffer through 14 years of my team not being good. And I said, yeah, but your team made the playoffs. Right. And your team made the playoffs over that stretch of time. Like, they weren't winning World Series, but they made the playoffs. Like, and not only that, but, like, you also had a team win a Super Bowl in that time. And so –
win an NBA title in that time.
Yeah, like after the Red Sox story started. And so it just, like, people don't get it outside of, I understand the desire to freak out. And we have a brand on this podcast of freaking out that we have to live up to. But, you know, as Anthony pointed out yesterday, they're at the exact midway point. They've never been better. Not good. Doesn't feel great when you're going through this, but this is the best record they've had through 81 games in franchise history. They're still 6.5 games clear for a playoff berth. Steve Foster said in a quote to Thomas Harding today on Rockies.com, there are going to be valleys. There are going to be peaks and there are going to be valleys. We weren't going to win 130 games this year. That is a baseball season, and it sucks really bad when you're going through it, but it's going to happen, man. This is the equivalent of playing bad in an NFL game for maybe 3.5 quarters. Yeah. And nobody watches the Broncos play 3.5 bad quarters against the Chiefs and go, season's over. Especially if by that time they're 8-5 or whatever they would be, whatever the equivalent to this would be.
Yeah. It's it's really hard to deal with it online because everything in Twitter is immediacy. That's the whole point of Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Is that everything is right away. And you can make large, sweeping declarations about whatever happens right when you're watching something live happening and unfolding before your eyes. And that's not how a baseball season works. Baseball season is a long season. That is the 8 games. Yeah, it doesn't suck. Of course it does. You do not want to lose 8 games in a row at any time throughout the season. But the Rockies had given themselves enough slack where right now, as you mentioned, they are the best that they've ever been halfway through the season. In this whole 8-game losing streak, they have only dropped 2.5 games free from a playoff spot. They were 9 games up on the Cubs when this slide started. Right now, they're 6.5. They're still 6.5 games clear of a playoff spot right now.
Yep.
And guess what? The Cubs, they look like garbage. Chris Bryant just got hurt. Guess what? It was like, oh, well,
Jake Arrieta is awful.
Then the Cubs will win the Central. I'm worried about the Brewers. Okay, the Brewers are playing like trash, too. There is nobody else in the National League playing well enough to even come close to a playoff berth right now.
No.
And the Rockies have lost 8 in a row. They are arguably the worst team in baseball right now as we speak over the last week, and they are still 6.5 games clear of a playoff spot.
No other team in the National League has a losing streak currently longer than 2 games, and yet the Rockies have only lost 2.5 games on where they were up on the division leader or the wild card leaderboard. So yeah, like I get it. I do get the need to freak out.
Well, we're not sitting here going, hey man, these last eight games sure have been fun, huh?
Right. Like, right. Or like, no reason to worry. Blip on the radar screen. No, there are definitely reasons to be worried. By the way, coming up on the show today, very excited, here in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to talk with Jonathan McNichol. We're going to give you a chance to forget about the Rockies for a little while and think about some younger future Rockies. Jonathan McNichol is from WNPR in New Haven, Connecticut, the NPR station for the state of Connecticut, and he is the host of the podcast The Second First Season, which is currently following the AA Hartford Yard Goats through their 2017 season. Of course, they missed the entirety of 2016 at home, the ballpark situation, yada yada yada. Really, really awesome podcast though. And the thing that I love about it, Anthony and I were talking about this before we got started today, it explains the minor leagues, it explains player development, it explains all the things that you feel too dumb to ask, that I know I felt way too dumb to ask before I got into working in minor league baseball. All of that gets answered on a show like this, and it's fantastic. So listen to it, download it, but we'll talk with him coming up shortly. Jonathan McNichol will join us to discuss the podcast, discuss Hartford. He was in on Ryan McMahon early this season. Ryan McMahon last night, again, 4 hits and a home run for AAA Albuquerque. Really good show. But getting back to the point at hand, we're not saying that there is no reason to be worried. There are certainly reasons to be worried right now. I think everybody has a thing in life or has had a thing in life that goes unexpectedly well, makes you really happy, feels great, and you think to yourself, you know what? The massive underlying issues in this thing, maybe they'll just go away. Maybe this won't end up being problematic. Maybe I can exist in this bubble. Everything will be terrific. We'll just go forward with this, and everything will keep going as well as it's going right now.
Right.
In sports, over the course of a 162-game season, those things tend to show themselves. The issue with the Rockies right now is everything is showing itself at the same time. Starters aren't getting deep into games, save for the last couple of days with Jeff Hoffman and Kyle Freeland. That's taxing the bullpen. Guys come in from the bullpen, they're either gassed or they're ineffective. Thank God Adam Ottavino looked better yesterday, because that was heartbreaking watching him Sunday in Los Angeles.
God.
And nobody is hitting on this team right now. Nobody is hitting. And in San Francisco, yeah, oftentimes,
Desmond,
right,
of.
Somehow, Ian Desmond reaches on an infield single every single at-bat for some reason.
The irony.
You know, and Mark Reynolds keeps swinging a hot bat, whatever. But DJ LeMahieu is hurt now. David Dahl tweeted 3 days ago that he was doing the things to get back on the field, video of himself working out. The next day, the Rockies put him on the 60-day DL.
That was a paper move to get a guy on the
It frees up a 40-man spot.
Frees up a 40-man spot. So
I also don't
move,
know, and I'll admit this, I don't know if the 60-day DL can be applied retroactively. I'm assuming that it can. I'm assuming they're not saying that he's going to be out 60 days from June 27th. But at the same time, like, he doesn't appear to be on the way back anytime soon. Gerardo Parra is still out. You don't know how long DJ LeMahieu is going to be gone now. There are issues that are very worrisome that you have to think about. But at the same time, this is not a team that's going to... I got asked a question on a radio interview this morning. What if the Rockies finish 500? If the Rockies finish 500, that means that from June, whatever it was, June 19th through the end of the season, they have to play 21 games under 500. That's not happening.
That'd be hard to do.
Yeah, that would be hard to do if they didn't have the July schedule coming up.
Yeah, but also, it might still be enough to get him into the playoffs. that's the thing.
Yep.
Like, this isn't last year or 2 years ago when the National League was so good up and down. This isn't one of those seasons. This is a down year for the National League. It is super, super top heavy. You can pencil in the Dodgers, pencil in the D-backs, pencil in the Nats. That's it. That's all you can do right now. Nothing else. And this is always what was going to happen in any course of a baseball season. This is always what it does. The first time you get adversity, it's how you respond to it. Now, the whole year we were talking about the Rockies and saying, like, wow, the young starting pitchers are doing really, really well right now. What's going to happen when the league figures them out, when they tire, when they have a bad start, when they have a couple bad starts in a row? How will they respond? Well, here we are. This is when we're going to know how everyone's going to react. I loved what Jeff Hoffman did the other day in San Francisco, coming off that atrocious inning that he had against the D-backs when he cruised the first three and then got blown up for 9 runs in the fourth. He came back in his very next start and looked like a future ace against the Giants.
Yep.
And like, oh, it was the Giants. Well, they just got swept by the Giants, so you can't say, oh, it was just the Giants.
And not only it's fun to jump on
awesome. He worked into the seventh. His stuff was getting there 94, 95, 97 in the seventh inning. He looked great. His breaking stuff was awesome. I loved how he responded.
It's fun to dump on the Giants. The Giants still have a very talented roster. Yeah, Brandon Crawford's had a down year. Brandon Belt has never turned into the guy that we expected Brandon Belt to be at the major league level. He's a good major league player, but you know, you and I saw him in 2010 when he was a Cal League All-Star, and you kind of felt like, man, this is the next really great
first
baseman.
He seemed
yeah. like he was going to be Freddie Freeman. It's sort of
right,
what Brandon
exactly.
Belt seemed like at a time. You know, obviously, the season that Buster Posey is having is ridiculous. And Hunter Pence is having a decent year. Austin Slater has sort of come out of nowhere. Denard Span is having a good season. So it's not as though that's an awful team talent-wise. They're an awful team record-wise. But talent-wise, that team, there's still a lot that you have to contend with there.
Still a bunch of guys who have always killed the Rockies.
Right. Right. So was that frustrating as hell to watch? Yeah, of course it was. But that doesn't mean that the way that people want to jump off the bandwagon so quickly and the glee with which the Denver media and the Broncos Avies are all about the June swoon, they still cannot finish June with a losing record. They will only finish June with a winning record. They have one more game in the month of June, and going into it, they're 14-12. So I hate to break it to everybody who was so thrilled about watching the Rockies fall apart. They're still going to have an above 500 June. Even if they lose tomorrow, they will still be 13 games over 500 going into July. And if you play at that level of ball through the rest of the season, you're a playoff team.
Yeah, that's how that works, guys. So, and I want to see if we can make a decree that if you jump off the bandwagon, you can't jump back on again.
You can't get back on. No.
No more.
No. Room. No. You're done. I don't know. There are definitely reasons to be worried. Tyler Anderson is back on the disabled list. Tyler Chatwood, from start to start, you can't figure out.
I have no idea.
You know, and right now there is going to be a lot of massaging of how the staff looks. Germán Márquez, is he going to get consistent time in the bullpen? He was thrown into the bullpen over the weekend, then made a start. He might be shifted back there at some point. Antonio Senzatella, again, only made 7 starts last year in AA, didn't have a full season's workload. We called from the beginning of the season that at some point the Rockies were going to have to try to limit his innings this year, especially because last year was due to a shoulder issue in part. You don't want to overwork something like that. So Senzatella is now in the bullpen, and there's a very good chance that he plays better in the bullpen anyway. Yeah. But this is, I think, the other thing that freaks everybody out who isn't really, A, you know, that good at understanding baseball, and B, maybe hasn't caught up to the idea of the 10-day disabled list, but there's going to be a lot of moves with this rotation, with this bullpen. It doesn't necessarily mean, oh, they can't settle on a rotation, they can't settle on a bullpen. It means you have depth and guys you want to rotate in and out, and you have different means and ways in which to do that.
And especially with as many young kids as they have in the rotation, you're not going to want to send those guys out there for 200 innings in their first full season in the big leagues. And so That's also why you're going to massage that 10-day DL. But this is why the Rockies hired Bud Black, right? To see. And that's the thing with Bud Black. He's been a great manager. I think he's been very good for this organization, for the pitching staff. The team seems to really enjoy him. He's a gregarious guy. He's also never been to the playoffs. Now, whenever the Padres played their best under Bud Black was almost always, after, besides that first year in 2007, was the second half of the season when they were already kind of out of it and they started playing really well in August and September and kind of saved Buddy's job for the next year. This is the first time they've had to play from in front. The Rockies, they're not used to playing from in front, to playing with a lead, so to speak. That's not been their style. Even the years they've made the playoffs, in 2007, they needed the crazy Rocktober run. In 2009, they were 10 games under 500 at the end of May.
Fired
Clint Hurdle.
Yep.
You know, this team is not used to start to finish playing well throughout an entire season. That is not what they do. So this is the first year that they've really been out in front, and we're seeing how they respond now. I want to see how they come out in Arizona this weekend. Arizona's a very tough place to play. They're a very, very good team. I've said on this podcast before, I think they're going to win this NL West. I think they're a better team than the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I want to see what happens, because you get John Gray back.
Yep.
You get your ace.
That's
your ace
the thing.
In the hole is coming back on Friday. Even if he doesn't pitch, you know, a no-hitter on Friday, just getting him back there, getting him at the top of the rotation, seeing him every fifth day, that is what matters more than anything.
Yeah, that to me is the biggest possible acquisition, really, to deem it that way, that the Rockies could have at this moment, is getting the guy back that you believe to be a premier frontline guy. I don't even know if you could say in the making anymore, because I think John Gray has established that when he's healthy. He seems to feel totally healthy, made a couple of rehab starts with AAA Albuquerque. The thing with John Gray is he is who you would look to be a stopper if he was healthy this entire time. Now, there's a little bit of mystique surrounding John Gray in the fact that he comes back at a time when you need him the most. And the Rockies have never really had a guy who's 25 years old who you look to, is it maybe Ubaldo to an extent, but who you look to sort of with a little bit of awe around him. And that's John Gray. Over the course of his two rehab starts, 13 strikeouts and 9 1/3. He did walk 5. He gave up 6 runs, but only 2 of those were earned. Albuquerque played atrocious defense behind him against El Paso, or against Sacramento in his first rehab start on June 19th. But he's tested the foot. The foot feels fine. He had a fracture in the foot, of course, if you forgot, back in April. He's the guy that you need. And the timing cannot – well, the timing could be a little bit better. The timing could have been against the Dodgers or against the Giants before this ballooned to 8 games. But this team has to respond in this series. If you can't get it going tomorrow behind John Gray, that's your biggest emotional lift. That's your biggest boost. That's the time when you got to do it. He draws Robbie Ray, which isn't going to be easy.
Right, and if he comes out and gets shelled, it's going to be somewhat demoralizing for everybody involved, and I get that. But if he comes out and he shoves, and he's the John Gray that we all remember and know and love, and they can maybe snap this losing streak, that's something that can spur you on for a week or two. You know?
By the way, I have the cutest mom on earth. She just texts, and my mom is on a cruise in Alaska. She's, you know, called and texted like when she – I know, and it looks amazing there. It makes me want to go to Alaska so bad. But she's called and texted when she has service, whatever. But she texts to ask how I'm doing and what's going on with the Rockies. Mom is adorable. And I said, it'd be better if they could win a game. And she said, I know your uncle checks the scores every day. And I said, things will be okay because John Gray comes back tomorrow. And I just love that my almost 70-year-old mother wants to know how the Rockies have been more than she cares about her own son's well-being.
That's fair.
You know, if I was the son, I get it. Tomorrow's big. This weekend is big. If they go to Arizona and they get swept, then all of a sudden you're looking at a circumstance where not only do you continue to fall behind the Dodgers, but then you're 7 games behind the Diamondbacks. If they go to Arizona and they sweep, all of a sudden you're 1 game behind the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to be either way because baseball is weird that way.
And then, by the way, you still have like 3 more months of the season.
Right. Right, that's what this ultimately comes down to. And we're going to talk to Jonathan McNichol coming up here in about 5 minutes or so. But what this ultimately comes down to is people want to jump off the bandwagon. People want to freak the hell out. It is June 29th. If this was August 29th and they were suffering through an 8-game losing streak and they had just blown 3 to a bad team like the Giants on the heels of throwing away division title chances with a sweep in Los Angeles, yeah, that'd be a nightmare. It's not. It's June. And as we pointed out many times, back in 2007, there was a Colorado Rockies team that did some things that you may have heard about, like going to the World Series. The 2007 late June road trip sounds a little bit familiar. They went on the road to Toronto, Chicago, and Houston. They dropped 9 out of 10. Four losses on that road trip. The closer, Brian Fuentes, 4 losses. They lost in 10 innings at Toronto on June 22nd, 11 innings at Houston on June 28th. They lost 9-8 in 9 innings. Fuentes took the loss in both of those games, June 29th, also after the extra innings game at Houston. And then again on that road trip, where did I miss the other one? 10-9 in Chicago on the 25th. That one was also in 9 innings. So
that
two
was
extra innings games.
A massive comeback for the Rockies in the 9th inning, and then Fuentes blew it immediately.
And then they blew it. The Rockies had 6 runs in the top of the 9th to take a 9-8
lead. That
really
broke my back in that streak.
And because I remember...
Go ahead.
No. No. You.
Because
you.
It's incredibly similar parallels. They were just coming off sweeping the Yankees at Coors Field. And it was like the highest this team had been really in maybe 12 years at that point.
Because and two series prior to that, they won 2 out of 3 in Boston.
In Boston, yeah. So it was the team was kind of really coming together, and they had just swept the Yankees, and the Yankees were a good team in 2007. And then it all fell apart on that road trip. They went 1-9, and I remember being so demoralized because it was the highest they had been in a decade to the lowest they had been in a decade, because similar to what we saw here, because coming off the Nolan sweep, the walk-off cycle home run, the sweep of the Giants, the next night or 2 nights later, he comes out, gets a triple, a 2-run triple in the 8th to give them a win, and we're feeling good. We're 20 blank games over 500, and then you lose 8 straight, and you get all of the wins sucked out of your sails. And that, but I will still maintain that I know we haven't been very, or the Rockies have not been very competitive in this year, in this stretch, and that's fine. And you're like, oh, well, at least they were competitive in that stretch of 2007. It was worse in 2007. 2007, we hadn't tasted anything yet.
And there was no reason to believe that team was going to be that good.
Absolutely not. And but to lose four games via a walk-off in a 10-game road trip, like that one really, really hurt.
All of them on your closer.
Where they just were. Yeah, Fuentes, oh, God. Felt so bad for him. And then he was demoted, and then Manuel Corpus came in, and he was a revelation in the closer's role for 1 year.
Yeah,
basically. After that, not so much.
By the way, June 19th to the 21st, and I was on a – after college, I did a backpacking trip through Europe with a couple of my friends, and I actually wrote about this Yankees series. We stayed in a place that had a TV, CNN International on the crawl, had Colorado thrash Yankees in series sweep, and I was like, what? What the hell happened? But look at these wins, these winning pitchers and losing pitchers in that series. Before we get to Jonathan McNichol here in a minute – on June 19th, the Rockies won 3-1 behind Josh Fogg, who beat Mike Mussina.
Mike Mussina, I remember. I was at that game.
On June 20th, they won 6-1. Jeff Francis beat Andy Pettit. And on June 21st, my 22nd birthday, 4-3 victory when Rodrigo Lopez beat Roger Clemens.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yep. Injected into my veins.
That all made a ton of sense. And then they went on the road and they lost 9 out of 10. Wah, wah. They bounced back from that with 5 straight victories over the Mets and Phillies. And don't forget, when the Rockies return from this road trip, the schedule is against a lot of really bad teams. And we'll talk about that again as we get there. The Cincinnati Reds will come to town, then the Chicago White Sox, then the All-Star break. Those two teams are terrible. And then they visit the New York Mets, who are also quite bad. So, ordinarily, you come to this podcast for just raving lunacy and hot takes, but we're here to tell you, don't...
calm the hell down.
Yeah, don't... just stay away from the Kool-Aid. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. They're 13 games over 500, 14 games over 500. They're not going to finish the season with 81 wins, Denver Sports Talk Radio. Apologies. So now we'll give you a chance to not think about the Rockies for a little bit. Jonathan McNichol from WNPR joins episode number 109 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast coming up next. Our guest on episode number 109 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, we are headed to the home of the AA Hartford Yard Goats, the state of Connecticut, and WNPR, where we find Jonathan McNichol, who is the host of the second first season of the WNPR podcast on the 2017 Hartford Yard Goats, who actually get to play in a home ballpark this year, which is something new for Hartford, and hence the name of the podcast. Jonathan, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Thanks a ton for joining us. We actually just learned about the podcast about a month or so ago. You're 4 episodes in. Episode 5 comes out soon. Is that today? Is that...
it's Friday. When does this show go out?
We're recording today, Thursday. It'll be out by Thursday evening, so by the time everybody listens to it, it'll be Friday. So go download episode number 5 of the second first season. So basically the podcast is telling the story of the 2017 Yard Goats, but it's doing so in this fascinating, all-encompassing angle of player development, of what it means to be a prospect, of what it means to be a minor league baseball player, of what it means to be a minor league front office member, the relationship between the front office and the parent club. It's fantastic, and it's all of the things that you want to know about minor league baseball if you don't necessarily know the intricacies of minor league baseball yet. How did this start? What was the genesis of this podcast?
Well, I mean, the real answer to that is the genesis of this podcast is that last year the city of Hartford screwed everything up and we didn't have a ballpark, so the team played on the road for a year. So that's my pitch is, here's this weird thing, this weird team. Can I do a show about it? And that's the way it goes. And what you're saying about explaining all the different angles of minor league baseball, almost from the beginning, it's public radio. I work in public radio. It's WNPR. We sort of assume that the audience isn't all giant baseball fans, so I have to kind of start from the ground up. And that's actually a lot of fun for me. I've been covering minor league baseball, you know, a story here and there for the station for a few years. But to think about it, about, you know, literally, how do they make the grass work? You know, what does it mean to be a minor league team? It's an interesting place to start.
The ballpark situation last year was a disaster. The contractors, went way over budget. They were behind schedule. The city and the contractors got into this bickering match publicly.
The FBI got involved.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit that stopped construction. And the thing that was so brutal for the team was the ballpark was somewhere between 85 and 95% finished, but had not been certified for occupancy or for games. So initially it was, and we've seen this in minor league baseball before, the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre team spent an entire season on the road a few years ago during a ballpark renovation. The Biloxi team a couple of seasons ago opened their ballpark late. They were in June. The El Paso team opened its ballpark late. That was in late April. And that's what it looked like it was going to be for the Yard Goats. It was first it was late April. Then it was maybe in June. Then it was the Eastern League All-Star break. Then it was who the hell knows when this ballpark's going to be open. What was it like being in Hartford during that? Because we all watched it from afar, and it was a new affiliation still for the Rockies. They were only in the second season of that player development contract, and that probably didn't look or feel great. Everybody said the right things with the parent club, but being on the ground level and watching that happen in Hartford, what was that like?
You know, it's funny. They when this was first announced was actually very late in the process. A lot of this happened kind of behind closed doors, and they said it was going. They were going to turn it around very quickly in a season and a half. They would go from there being a team in New Britain and no stadium in Hartford to there being a team and a stadium in Hartford in, you know, 16, 18 months, something like that. And when that happened, it seemed to us like, you know, like here in the newsroom, it seemed like, how could they possibly do that? At the same time, it seemed like, how could they say that if they can't do it? So it's just from there was just this long cascade of every step along the way was like, maybe they really can't do it. But they wouldn't have said it. So I think you have to just rely on that there's a lot of incompetence and there's a certain amount of corruption everywhere. And so it just ends up that they really couldn't do it. And then eventually they played the whole season on the road. And even this season, in the second episode of the show, I left it up in the air because I didn't know for sure they were going to play this season on time. There were questions the week before they opened about if they had the cheese melters they needed, and they couldn't open without the cheese melters, and the old company had them locked up somewhere, and it just went on and on. I think there's actually still parts that are unfinished, but anyway, go ahead.
More than likely, but you know, what is it about Hartford? Obviously, proximity to you is what makes Hartford easy to talk about for you, but in terms of it, just like the whole baseball experience, what about Hartford in this situation drew you in? Was it just the fact you can correlate it to so much that's going on in America right now that it was kind of like this double standard with America versus what this ballpark is going on in Hartford, or was it just strictly a baseball sense that you wanted to get out there with this podcast?
Hartford is a city that I don't want to sound as negative as I could. The New York Times just did a story a week, 10 days ago, about kind of how depressing it is in Hartford. It's a city aching for revitalization. Okay. And it's a city that hasn't really had something like this to call its own basically since the Whalers left 20 years ago. Moving the team from a suburb right into downtown Hartford and in a part of downtown Hartford that was kind of a wasteland of parking lots. Now it's a wasteland of parking lots with a ballpark in the middle, and there's actually cars to park in the parking lots. There's the chance that this is the spark of Hartford becoming its own thing. There's a lot in this episode that I'm just working on right now about the sort of history of this and the way Hartford looks at itself as a city between Boston and New York, as this sort of armpit, not quite a real city. And then there's the part two where just in Connecticut, New Haven, a smaller city, is much more vibrant. Has a much more active art scene and nightlife, and Yale is there, and it used to have a baseball team but doesn't anymore. It's just a city that's looking for an identity beyond, you know, insurance, and so maybe baseball is the beginning of that. And so that's my excuse to feed this to a public radio audience, is they're interested in that stuff maybe, and I can show them that the baseball part is interesting too, hopefully.
Jonathan, the start of the season for this team, on the field, it hasn't been great. But it's a team that is pretty well stocked with prospects, and that's one of the lines that you draw very clearly is, and I love it, one of the very first questions that you asked Jerry Weinstein, the manager of this team, is, are you worried about the fact they're not winning? And instantly he says no, because it's not the point in minor league baseball. And it's so difficult as sports fans for us to all wrap our minds around, how can you be out there and not really care about what the record is? Everybody wants to win. These guys all want to win. The coaching staff wants to win. But ultimately, the goal is to win at the major league level. So to convey that is difficult, but it breaks down in so many different layers, which is, are the guys learning how to be good teammates? Are they learning what they need to do to prepare for AAA or prepare for the major leagues? And the question that you arrive at, especially in the last episode, in episode number 4, is what is a prospect and what is not a prospect? And you laid out there very perfectly that the organization will say, we believe everybody's a prospect. Not everybody is a prospect. What was it like learning about that in terms of the realities for a guy like Ryan McMahon that you spotlight through the first few episodes and is now, no joke, batting nearly 500 through 25 games in AAA versus some of the other guys on this roster who they're at AA. It's a very difficult and very advanced level of baseball, but they're probably not headed for big-time major league careers.
Yeah, you know, so that episode, it's kind of this dual profile of McMahon and a guy named Ashley Grader, who just yesterday made it on the Eastern League All-Star team. And it's the first time he's been on an All-Star team at any level in his entire playing career. And he's, you know, he's 27 years old and Ryan McMahon is 22 years old. And there's this sense that, like, to make the Eastern League All-Star team, it's cool for him, but it's almost not cool really, because the other guy, McMahon, went to AAA. Like, that's what you do if you're really the prospect. You're out of here. If you're having a good season at this level, but maybe this is your ceiling, that there's this, it's almost sad. There's a bittersweetness to this. And really, the next episode that I'm working on right now is about the umpires, and they're in the same situation. There's prospect umpires and then there's not prospect umpires. It's this thing that sort of hangs over minor league baseball, is like, everybody who's here doesn't want to be here. They want to be somewhere higher. And that's really interesting to me, and I'm compelled by the bittersweetness. So yeah, that's a thing I'm trying to pick apart. Yes.
Well, and the biggest difference for that is because between high A and double A, that's arguably the biggest jump in all of minor league baseball in terms of the talent, right, in terms of, you know, everything around you. The ballparks are bigger, the stage seems bigger, and a lot of guys, they kind of hit the end of the road in double A. So it really can be this bittersweet moment. But is that kind of something you noticed as well going through the whole organization? You can kind of see, you know, guys have been dreaming of becoming a Major League Baseball player of their entire lives. And then Hartford could potentially be a place where that dream kind of goes to die.
Yes and no. Yeah. So when the first work I ever did covering baseball was actually, Connecticut has two independent league teams, two teams in the Atlantic League. At the time, there was just one, the one in Bridgeport. And that's like a whole other version of this, where those guys are very talented and older and have been around, but have already kind of passed their ceiling. And it probably wasn't the big leagues. Some of them, like Sean Burrow, spent some time there and stuff, some real time there. Where I was going with that is, yes, but a lot of these guys are realistic about it. And somebody like Ashley Grader, I think he's aiming to be a coach, you know? I think the trajectories are different, and not all of these guys, I mean, he would obviously love to get even a day in the big leagues and be in the Baseball Almanac and all that stuff. Baseball Encyclopedia and all that stuff. But there are other ways that this stuff can go, and coaching is a thing, and really just, you know, the bragging rights. I mean, he's going to be able to tell his grandkids that he played double-A baseball for the Rockies. And, like, there's not very many people that played double-A baseball for the Rockies. So, yes and no, I think.
Jonathan, the front office of a minor league baseball team is always a unique setting. Anthony and I have worked in too many. But for Hartford, it's even stranger, because that front office had to work an entire season not having a team. And last year, there was so much focus on the social media persona of the Yard Goats, especially on Twitter, the @GoYardGoats account, which took on the personality of several different front office members. But it was really something that came about because the Yard Goats wanted to figure out a way to connect with fans while not being at home, not having a ballpark, and not having a way to connect to people in Hartford. But in that, there was a lot that went on that was kind of a dry run for how to operate a franchise. Mike Abramson was the assistant general manager, still is the assistant general manager. He's kind of the one who crafted that social media identity. Dan Finkenbaum has taken it over and done fantastic work with it. But there are so many other people in that front office who spent time selling tickets for a team in a ballpark that didn't really exist yet, getting things set. You did an entire segment about the ground staff there. Yeah. And the relationship between a front office and a major league team is very, very rarely in line. There's virtually zero connection between the Colorado Rockies and the Hartford Yard Goats in terms of crossover there. So to figure out how that office operates and what the dynamic is, what was the way that you found kind of the identity of what it was like for those guys getting started now in a first season, but also having kind of done this as a dry run last year?
Yeah, you know, so most of this team actually comes from the New Britain franchise that moved. So in certain ways, they were kind of already a well-oiled machine, I think, and sort of knew what they were doing. Now they were just in a larger city with a different set of problems that they couldn't really necessarily figure out until the game started playing, like the parking, for instance. But I will say that a number of them said to me that last year was nice because they got to go home at 5 o'clock. That's not what they're used to. And their office wasn't a baseball park, which in some ways was bad, but in other ways, you know, the plumbing worked better maybe in an office building than it would in a ballpark. I think a lot of those guys would tell you that a dry run, it really wasn't. They didn't know what was going to happen until the games really started getting played this year, and they really had to put butts in the seats and then clean up after the butts that were in the seats and all that kind of stuff.
So, Jonathan, for someone who has not been to a game in Hartford, what's the experience like at Dunkin' Donuts Park? I know it's obviously a new ballpark, but it seems like everybody seems to be enjoying this season, especially compared to what all went down last year. I mean, just what is it like to have that place finally open and seem to be thriving so far?
Yeah, it's really nice. I'm going to sound like a commercial here for a minute, but it's a beautiful park. It's a beautiful field. It's, you know, everything's brand new, obviously, but there's, you know, there's an upper deck in the outfield, which you don't necessarily see in a minor league park. The video screen is huge and ridiculous, and as I understand it, bigger and better than the one in Denver. Well, I've never seen that, but that's what Chris Forbes said to me. Yeah. You know, and like things like the plumbing work and things are clean and nice. And the field is really a spectacle. Two nights ago, one of the nights this week, Wednesday night or something, there was a ridiculous thunder shower at 6:15 with hail and just, I don't know, an inch of water everywhere. And they played the game at 8:15. They just opened up the drains and it all emptied out. And there's 2 miles of pipe under there and it all went away. And they played a relatively dry baseball game like an hour late. It's really nice and really beautiful. And I do think people are really happy with it. They're selling out like basically every weekend night and selling a lot of tickets during the week too. The thing that's a bigger question though, is that neighborhood, this part of Hartford, that has been this sort of dead zone for a long time, that it'll take years to know what effect the park really has over there. You have to imagine that them selling lots of tickets can only be a good thing. It will only put a lot of people in that part of the town. But we won't really know about the revitalization side of this for quite some time.
It's fascinating, and that's kind of a mini Coors Field, mini Camden Yards. That sort of idea of economic generation is being tried in so many different minor league markets right now. When Anthony and I worked in the Carolina League in Winston-Salem, there was a big plan: open a ballpark, we'll put apartments and hotels and restaurants and shops and all this stuff in the outfield. And as of a couple of years ago, the last time that I saw it, that stuff hadn't yet come to fruition. That's one of the stories where it doesn't necessarily happen. And then there's a success story like Durham, for example, where you put a ballpark in downtown everything explodes around it, and things look like a brilliant decision because of the foresight to land the ballpark there. Hartford, we know we're pulling for Hartford because it's an affiliation, a front office, and a team that have been a whole ton of fun since they started last season, and now finally getting into Dunkin' Donuts Park for the 2017 season. And you can catch up on the second first season from WNPR, which is on iTunes and is everywhere else you find podcasts. Jonathan, what else is coming up on this? How many episodes are you going to do, and what else are you going to cover this year?
The plan is to do 9. You see, there's a certain poetry to that. Yes, right. So the next one is about umpires, which I'm very excited about. It will be sort of a kind of standalone thing, but I've learned so much about how umpiring works. So that's the next episode. I've spent this whole week with one crew of umpires, and they're funny, weird guys, and they have funny, weird things that they do. So there will be an episode about that. There's going to be an episode about coaching, I hope. Dave Berba is the pitching coach here, and he's an interesting guy who people maybe remember from his major league days. And I'll spend some time with him and some of the guys he's coaching, a guy like Ryan Castellani, who's a big prospect whose numbers don't look great, but who has shown some brilliance here and there. He looks like Max Scherzer pitching just, 4 miles an hour slower. But other than that... yeah, so umpires, coaching, I will do the last episode will be a sort of, roundup of the whole year and where we think things are going. And that leaves me one other episode that I can do whatever. Maybe Brendan Rodgers gets some time. I don't know. I'm going to leave that up and see what happens.
Brendan Rodgers is he's making a bid to be the next Ryan McMahon on the second first season. So far through 7 games with Hartford, he had 3 hits last night. He's already OPSing or he's batting .259. The OPS a little bit low because he hasn't yet gotten a chance to just smash dingers out of that ballpark yet in Hartford, but it'll come. He's 20 years old. Jonathan McNichol is on Twitter with one of my favorite handles of all time. It's at McNichol Pants, and it is it's lacking the H that you might remember from McNichol Sports Arena if you are a Denver nerd. But Jonathan on Twitter, find him there. Find the podcast, the second first season. It is fantastic. I cannot recommend it enough. And Jonathan, it's been so great to talk to you, and we might have to do it again after episode/inning 9 at the end of the year. Thanks a ton, man. This has been great.
I'd love to. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Jonathan McNichol from WNPR in Connecticut. A big thanks to him.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and it's not often that like you have a podcast and you plug another podcast, but that show is so good, and it really is. I mean, I remember before I started working in minor league baseball, one of the thoughts I had was like, sometimes teams switch affiliations. Well, what happens to the players? What happens to the front office? Do they stay in the city where they are? Do they move along to the new ballpark, the new city, the new franchise, whatever? All that stuff gets answered. We actually had an Ask PDP question that we missed last week from Andrea, who emailed in, and her question was, quote, when a team changes its affiliation in the minor leagues, what happens with the players on that team? For example, do minor league teams move from one city to another? Do the Rockies players move from Modesto to Lancaster? And the answer is yes. Team employees, that's what players are. They are employees of the major league franchise. Front office employees at the minor league level are employees of the minor league franchise. So those people stay. For example, when I was in Myrtle Beach, we switched from an Atlanta Braves affiliation in 2010 to a Texas Rangers affiliation in 2011. Got a whole new prospect-laden roster, coaching staff, training staff, strength and conditioning people, player development people, all that. Everything that's on the field is movable. Everything that's off the field stays with that franchise until you decide to leave and go do something else. But a very good question, and stuff like that is explained so beautifully in this podcast. There's some really cool tie-ins to just the history of baseball in Hartford. Mark Twain, the fact that Hartford was a charter National League city, the first doubleheader in baseball was ever played in Hartford, and the same pitcher pitched complete games in both ends of that doubleheader, which is ridiculous. But it's a really good show. Go download it. It's awesome. And then listen to this.
A really big show.
So I think that'll do it. A couple of quick notes before we get out of here. Brendan Rodgers, in case you missed it, has been promoted to those AA Hartford Yard Goats as of the end of the California League's first half. He went to the Cal League All-Star Game, as we predicted, and then was bumped up immediately after that. So far, he is 7 for his first 27 in AA. He had 3 hits last night. Again, we're recording this on Thursday, the 29th. Rodgers has yet to record an extra base hit in AA, but... yeah, it's been a week, and he's 20 years old. Ryan McMahon, it's getting to the point where I'm wondering if Ryan McMahon is a human being or not. Ryan McMahon started his season extremely well, obviously, with the Hartford Yard
Goats.
Oh, my God.
Do you think he stole David Dahl?
Maybe.
And like, absorbed him?
Hey, man, this is exactly what David Dahl did last year when he got the AAA, too. Maybe they're the same person, just different.
I've never seen them in the same room together.
Brian McMahon went hitless in two of his first four games in AAA. He's gone hitless in one of the 21 games since. Seven-game hitting streak. Four of those games, he has multiple hits. Brian McMahon at AAA has four games with four or more hits this year out of 25 games played.
Is that good?
I think it's pretty good. And you can't even do the hashtag Coors, hashtag Albuquerque splits because he's batting 425 with a 1052 OPS on the road. Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. We haven't been able to talk a ton of minors this year because the Major League team has been great, and that's fantastic. So hopefully that'll continue to be the case. But for right now, just it's going to be okay. Calm down. Things will be fine. They got to get back on track, hopefully against the D-backs. But, you know, it's June. If we're playing Funeral March music in August, which is entirely possible.
Which we've done before.
Yeah, then we'll have a different conversation.
You come back from this trip, and here is the schedule. After this Arizona series, you have four at home against Cincinnati, three against the White Sox at home. Then you play three at the Mets. Then you come back home for six more against the Padres and Pirates. Like,
the Mets. I don't even know if the Mets are going to be able to field
beaters.
A team.
Let's say that. You come back and you have, 7, so 13? 13 out of 16 games at home against all losing teams.
I don't know, man. They're not good teams. I honestly don't know if the Mets are going to be able to put a team together. Everybody's hurt.
Yeah, well, good for them.
Everybody on that team is hurt.
Good for them.
They'll just run out a roster of AA Binghamton Rumble Ponies, which is actually the name of
Brandon
the team.
Brandon Nimmo's going to, you know, go 20 for 21 in the series.
You and I share a very strong love for Brandon Nimmo.
Yes, we do.
Because of his Wyoming ties. Me, because his brother played in Nebraska.
Yep.
And because he's a really friendly dude. I'll cheer for Brandon Nimmo.
Sure.
Let's do it. We'll make that happen. Just not against the Rockets.
I'll do it. Yeah.
Okay. I guess that'll do it. I got tacos with Nate Kreckman coming up. Taco apostrophe S.
So
I gotta,
wow.
I got to run
good
lunch.
For you.
But yeah, that's the show. Again, go find Jonathan McNichol on Twitter. He's at McNicholPants, and the podcast is the second first season. It's fantastic. A couple of plugs. One, you can get your Purple Dinosaur podcast Party Deck Against the World shirt, as well as a 20th and Blake shirt, the Mile High Hardball shirt, Charlie Blackbeard, the original Colorado C baseball logo that we did. Those things are at Humble Monster, Purple Dinosaur Podcast, BigCartel.com. A plug for a thing that I don't get any money for, but I wrote a story about once. MILB this year is doing a thing called the Hometown Collection, throwback merchandise, throwback hats. Today, just today, we released the all-white Casper Ghosts hat, which was just a one-season-only hat, but it's got the glow-in-the-dark ghost logo. It's gorgeous, and that's at MILB.com right now. The MILB store, which I think is MILBstore.com. Anyway, so go get that if you're a ghost nerd like the rest of us. And, yeah, I guess that's it. Right, buddy? Right, pal?
I think so.
Right, friendo?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go get some taco apostrophe S, and hopefully that'll make him get taco apostrophe S tonight.
Hooray. Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, tomorrow.
Off day.
Tonight, okay, when you're listening to this, if you're listening on Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, thank God it's an off day. Hopefully they're doing something fun in Phoenix, which is, I don't know, eating Mexican food.
Top golf, man.
Oh, yeah, top golf. That's what everybody does, I guess.
Yeah.
In the Phoenix area. All right. He's Anthony. Say bye, Anthony.
Bye, Anthony.
Tyler. Talk to you next week.
Bye, Tyler.
Bye. Bye.